deserts and streams, the rise of Dos Cabezas, and the outlaws I see in my dreams.
This is Kathy Damaris, volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona, reading from the July 2021 issue of Arizona Highways Magazine. I'll start with the article entitled The Other Side of the Rainbow. Rainbow Bridge is a massive fusion of sandstone that stands 290 feet tall and stretches 275 feet between two canyon walls. Getting there is easy today because of Lake Powell. There was a time, however, when an 18-mile overland passage was the main route. That's the route our writer took. And she's glad she did. Standing at the foot of the rainbow, she writes, I bask in the bridge's sacred geology without crowds as indigenous people, explorers, and early tourists once did. And this is written by Morgan Shogren. I've experienced it by boat and by land. And personally, there's more reverence in being able to do it on foot. When you go by boat, you miss all the scenery, the high vistas, the nice mesas, the canyons, the water, unquote. As a young boy growing up in the Shanto and Inscription House chapters of the Navajo Nation, Leo Mannheimer listened to his grandfather, Mike Calamity, a medicine man, tell stories and prayers about Rainbow Bridge, Tese Na Na Na'ihi, or Na Zi Huzi in Diné. Yet it wasn't until adulthood, when he moved to Navajo Mountain with his wife, that Mannheimer took his first trek to the sacred stone rainbow. In 1979, having never gone backpacking before, he carried a wool blanket and plastic bags filled with canned food down the Rainbow Trail. The experience changed the course of his life, and he continues to guide hikers to Rainbow Bridge, as he has for more than four decades. Each year, tens of thousands of people take a ferry across Lake Powell from Page to witness the world's largest natural bridge, which stands an impressive 290 feet tall. Boating to Rainbow Bridge, just north of the Arizona state line in Utah, is not necessarily new. Starting in the 1930s, river runners journeying down the Colorado River through Glen Canyon often stopped for a 12-mile round-trip hike up Bridge Canyon to the site. But in 1963, the completion of Glen Canyon Dam turned the passageway into a reservoir, and with it came the possibility of mass tourism. Although lake water expanded access to Rainbow Bridge, it also disconnected travelers from the adventurous overland journey once required to get there. Mannheimer's sentiment is that something of great value is lost when visitors don't experience what lies on the other side of the rainbow, and for those who are physically able, the effort it takes to hike there. With a heavy pack, equipped with 4 days of supplies, strapped to my back, I've come to the Rainbow Trail to walk through the pages of history embedded in the landscape. Regulated via permits from the Navajo Nation, the 18-mile, one-way, single-track trail is smooth and well-marked, allowing me to safely peel my eyes off the ground and marvel at an unending expanse of slick rock domes. In the distance, my eyes scale towering, untouchable mesas butted up against the ribcage of 10,328-foot Navajo Mountain, the heart of this desert landscape. In the middle of spring, the mountain is still covered in snow, and an icy breeze chills my skin as it spills into the narrow canyons below. While Lake Powell has completely altered the landscape of the Colorado River west of Rainbow Bridge, the modern Rainbow Trail to its east has remained relatively unchanged for more than a century. The overland route first made headlines on August 14, 1909, when the Cummings-Douglas expedition reached Rainbow Bridge. Originating as two separate expeditions, the parties headed by Byron Cummings and W.B. Douglas initially were racing each other to the bridge. Cummings' local guide, John Wetherill, known as a peaceful man of few words but strong influence, managed to unify the teams en route, and the parties proceeded to Rainbow Bridge together. The story might be different, however, if not for Wetherill's wife, Louisa, who first learned about Rainbow Bridge from a Navajo trader and subsequently persuaded her husband to lead the Cummings-Douglas group. The current iteration of the Rainbow Trail, part of which was constructed by the Civilian Conservation Corps in 1933, is a slight variation of the Cummings-Douglas route. Although history books list the Cummings-Douglas expedition as the, quote, discoverers of Rainbow Bridge, unquote, the expeditions were led by San Juan Southern Paiute guides Nasa Begay and Jim Mike, who already knew its location. Archaeologist Neil M. Judd, a young member of the expedition, understood this context, writing in Arizona Highways in 1967, quote, I have often been asked how we first learned of Rainbow Bridge and who really discovered it. The real discoverer was some unknown Indian in the unrecorded past, unquote. In 1927, Wetherill petitioned for and installed a bronze plaque near Rainbow Bridge to honor Begay, who had died of influenza in 1918. But it wasn't until 1974 that the National Park Service honored Mike, then 104 years old, with a ceremony to recognize his contribution and paid him the $50 guide fee he was determined to be owed. Finally, in the early 1980s, Mike's plaque was installed next to Begay's. Although the Cummings-Douglas group didn't technically discover the bridge, the significant media attention paid to the expedition placed Rainbow Bridge on modern maps, leading to its designation as a national monument by President William Howard Taft in 1910. The lore of the desert adventure quickly attracted a new wave of tourists to travel via pack animal along the fabled Rainbow Trail. Those visitors included Theodore Roosevelt and Zane Grey. They were led there separately in 1913 by Begay and Wetherill, who became widely known as respected guides. Also among the early pilgrims was Charles Bernheimer, a wealthy Manhattan businessman who became so smitten that he began writing about his experiences in the New York Times, National Geographic, and a 1924 book, Rainbow Bridge. In 1922, Bernheimer's team, which included Wetherill, pioneered a marginally shorter route to Rainbow Bridge by using dynamite to blast a mule path over a sandstone cleft known as Redbud Pass. Still in use today, this 16-mile route from the south side of Navajo Mountain is steeper, drier, and more primitive than the northern route. Yet none of these routes were pioneered by Anglos or their guides, as Navajo oral history recognizes that the faint trails the routes follow might date to the basket maker and ancestral Puebloan cultures. And according to Mannheimer, a small band of Navajos further developed the ancient routes in the 1860s, while the U.S. Army was forcibly marching some 10,000 Navajos to present-day New Mexico during the Long Walk. A band of two dozen Navajos, led by Hascanini, evaded capture by residing in the canyons behind Navajo Mountain, including Bridge Canyon, the location of Rainbow Bridge. Quote, I think when the Navajos were avoiding capture, they saw the mountain as a shield, something that protected them from the outside world, and so they were able to survive, unquote, Mannheimer says. Descending into Surprise Valley were the first hints of silky white sago lilies and purple sage are budding, I passed an old hogan, long out of use, with Navajo Mountain standing like a fortress behind it. The red Indian paintbrushes that surround the site are a reminder of the people who walked this path long before tourists did and still call this place home. Each step through the backcountry between Navajo Mountain and Rainbow Bridge traverses a substrat of history that cannot be witnessed by boat. Around the bend of a side canyon, I encounter Wetherill's name, dated May 26, 1918, inscribed on a red wall streaked with orange varnish. The Rainbow Bridge backcountry was also home for Wetherill, who served as custodian of Rainbow Bridge National Monument. He resided with his family among the Navajos in Kayenta, where they ran a trading post. That connection to the area lives on today through historian Harvey Leek, a Prescott native who was Wetherill's great-grandson. Although Leek had heard bits and pieces of family history from his mother, It was Bernheimer's book that spurred Leek to take his own journey on the Rainbow Trail in 1979, the same year as Mannheimer, who now is among Leek's hiking companions. In a 2019 blog post, Leek recalled the transcendental experience. Quote, "After a memorable week on the Rainbow Trail, our adventures reached a climax when we rounded a bend in the canyon and the great Rainbow Natural Bridge first came into view. The anticipation of that moment, fueled by mental images of paintings, photographs, and historical accounts, culminated in a profound sense of fulfillment that transcended mere aesthetics or pride in physical accomplishment. I began to understand why John Wetherill and his more perceptive clients were so attracted to the reason," unquote. Since that trip, Leek has taken more than 50 hiking trips to Rainbow Bridge and written extensively about his family and the Colorado Plateau's history. Mannheimer and Leek share and exemplify the living, cultural, and historical tapestry still paving the way to Rainbow Bridge, yet both worry that these connections are being lost on modern travelers. Quote, "People forget Rainbow Bridge and what it stands for, Navajo Mountain and what it stood for, the sacred springs, the pillars that represent the deities and the gods," unquote, Mannheim says. Quote, "The average child, the average Navajo, I wish they could at least take the time to take a look at those things and see for themselves the places that gave their elders and ancestors hope and spirituality, which in turn gave them a better life," unquote. Leek offers a similar sentiment. "I wish more people knew the enlightening effects Rainbow Bridge has had on its visitors down through the past 111 years and how those profound experiences were enriched by the participants' rugged adventures along the Rainbow Trail," he says, and the twinkle in his eyes speaks to this magic as much as his words do. Quote, "It was a journey as well as a destination. It tells you something about life. I think sometimes effort is needed, and then you get a really deep reward for what you're doing," unquote. Both men say the route to Rainbow Bridge is worthy of being traveled and treasured by those who obtain a Navajo permit and visit respectfully. But even for those who elect to travel by boat, understanding the history of overland travel to the bridge will enhance the experience. "A final climb takes me to the edge of the Rainbow Plateau, where pinyon juniper forests fade into a naked sea of sandstone so vast that Lake Powell is indistinguishable. During my 2,000-foot descent, the temperature rises and contrasts with the cool water splashing my feet as I cross Aztec Creek and enter Bridge Canyon, where I'm swallowed by towering sandstone flanks streaked in rust-colored varnish. Along the walls, I follow ancient etchings of bighorn sheep around the canyon curves, and I find my pace lagging. As I draw closer to Rainbow Bridge, I dread reaching Lake Powell's backed-up waters and witnessing their effect." The sanctity of Rainbow Bridge spurred a controversy that began in 1956 when Congress authorized the construction of Glen Canyon Dam. Many feared that the reservoir's higher water level would weaken the bridge's structure and put it at risk of collapse, a threat to an active cultural site revered by the Navajos and several other southwestern tribes. Those concerns failed to halt or change the dam project, but the Park Service did promise to protect the bridge. After the 710-foot dam was completed in 1963, 46 feet of water collected beneath Rainbow Bridge when Lake Powell reached full pool in 1980. The bridge survived, but the new lake brought a sudden ease of access, and with it, a loss of the sense of adventure required to reach the site. Today, drought and other factors have left Lake Powell near its lowest ever water levels, leaving this stretch of Bridge Canyon looking nearly as it did pre-dam. As the canyon deepens, the trail traverses a neatly carved, glossy pink sandstone channel flowing with crystalline water and adorned with native plant life. Around another sinuous bend in the canyon, I pass through a wooden cattle gate into the National Monument. Here, my first glimpse of the bridge spurs me onward. As I approach, I resist blinking and lift my gaze skyward in an effort to take in the full view of the behemoth fusion of Kayenta sandstone and Navajo sandstone spanning 275 feet between canyon walls. I forget about my camera and simply stare in witness. Nothing in the man-made world can contextualize this perfect rainbow. Zane Grey, the author of popular Western romance novels, also found himself at a loss to describe Rainbow Bridge in 1913. Quote, I found it never seemed the same at any two moments. Near at hand, it was too vast a thing for immediate comprehension. I wanted to ponder on what had formed it, to reflect upon its meaning as to age and force of nature. Yet all I could do was to see, unquote, he wrote. At the time, Gray couldn't envision motorized access, much less a water route to such a remote wonder. It was not for many eyes to see, he wrote. The tourist, the leisurely traveler, the comfort-loving motorist would never behold it. Only by toil, sweat, endurance, and pain could any man look. It seemed well to realize that the great things of life had to be earned. The bridge would always be alone, grand, silent, beautiful, unintelligible, and as such, I bade it a mute, reverent farewell. The bridge's spiritual significance to the Navajo people also defies description, but that's by design. Mannheimer explains, as a Navajo guide, my biggest priority is to help clients see and experience the beauty and wonder of Navajo country. Information on religion is usually limited to general information, as specific information can only be shared at certain times of the year. Rainbow Bridge is said to be one of the cornerstones of Navajo religion and beliefs. The information I share is usually general, at the urging of Navajo medicine people. Perhaps there is no adequate or appropriate way to describe Rainbow Bridge. Thus, to fully understand its significance, people must go and see it for themselves. Standing at the foot of the rainbow, I bask in the bridge's sacred geology without crowds, as indigenous people, explorers, and early tourists once did. Now, more people than ever may experience Rainbow Bridge, but much of that experience remains securely tucked beyond the rainbow, waiting for those who journey across the desert. There's a sidebar entitled Visiting Rainbow Bridge. Rainbow Bridge National Monument is currently open, but services are reduced due to the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic. Those traveling by boat from Lake Powell can visit the monument from sunrise to sunset. There is no entrance fee, although there is a fee for Glen Canyon National Recreation Area, which includes Lake Powell. For more information, call 928-608-6200 or visit nps.gov/RAB, R as in Robert. Both of the hiking trails to Rainbow Bridge are on the Navajo Nation, which at press time remain closed to visitors. Please respect and follow all tribal ordinances. When the land is open, hikers must obtain a backcountry permit from the tribe. For more information, visit NavajoNationParks.org/permits. On the trail, look at, but do not touch, artifacts or cultural sites such as rock art, dwellings, potsherds, and arrowheads. Leave any artifacts or fossils where you find them and camp away from any sites you encounter. Don't use social media to share locations of sensitive sites. Pack out anything you pack in and stay on existing routes to avoid disrupting the soil. And be sure to drive only on approved routes and park only at marked trailheads to avoid trespassing on private land. As a companion article to Morgan Shogren's, I'm going to read the editor's letter. Robert Steve is the editor of Arizona Highways magazine, and he writes, 180 degrees in 8 decades separate Morgan Shogren and Irvin S. Cobb. They're as different as Amelia Earhart and Andy Warhol. She's a tanned, intrepid nomad who runs ultra marathons. He was a man with a round shape, bushy eyebrows, full lips, and a triple chin. She lives in tents, concocts eclectic burritos, and writes to protect the soul of wild places. He lived in Manhattan, hosted the Academy Awards, and worked for Joseph Pulitzer as the highest-paid staff reporter in the United States. Their connection is a dotted line that runs from the slick rock domes of northern Arizona to the base of Rainbow Bridge, and their backcountry adventures are bookended in the archive of this magazine. Morgan's story is new. Mr. Cobb's came in 1940. Our leading article this month, editor Raymond Carlson wrote in July of that year, is by that grand American author and personality, Irvin S. Cobb. We wish we could boast about our editorial inspiration in seeking out Mr. Cobb and persuading him to tell us of Rainbow Bridge. It would be a good story, but alas, it would not be true. One afternoon in the mail, a bulky package arrived at our office with a short note appended in which the author hoped we could find room for his article. He said he would like to repay a debt for many pleasant days spent in exploring the remote corners of our state. I wasn't familiar with Mr. Cobb, but the guy could surely write. Like Mark Twain, he mixed an inimitable brand of humor with a masterful command of the language, and like Craig Childs, his powers of observation could transport a reader from a long line at a red light to the banks of Aztec Creek, or the base of an unimaginable natural bridge. Statistics, he wrote, however sizable, just seem to curl up to insignificance when they start wriggling against a creation so gorgeously symmetrical, so overwhelmingly majestic in itself, and so starkly splendid in its setting that the English language just lies down and begs for help when you try to describe it. I know this. The very first sight of it repaid for every new-laid blister upon my own setting, and that I may state for the benefit of any interested blister fancier means right smart repayment. Before I even finished the piece, I shared a copy with Morgan. I'm trying to imagine him on a mule going down the Cliff Canyon Trail, she texted me about halfway through. She knew exactly where he was at that moment. In the 80 years between their expeditions, the Rainbow Trail hasn't changed much, and that's the ultimate hope for the backcountry, that it remain unchanged, that it be preserved and protected for future generations of explorers. Something will have gone out of us as a people if we ever let the remaining wilderness be destroyed, Wallace Stegner wrote. It seems so simple, preservation and protection, yet as I write this, federal rangers in southern Utah are standing guard over a four-panel collection of petroglyphs known as Birthing Rock. They're there because vandals scrawled racist and vulgar graffiti across rock carvings that had survived unscathed for more than 1,000 years. That blasphemy comes just a few weeks after a rock climber drilled bolts into another set of petroglyphs. It's wrong, the climber told Outside Magazine. It shouldn't have happened. It's just poor education on my part, and I do take full responsibility, as he should. I can't think of anything more shameful than the desecration of ancient cultural sites. These places are to indigenous people what St. Peter's Basilica is to Roman Catholics, what the Western Wall is to Jews, what the Great Mosque of Mecca is to Muslims. Like Birthing Rock, Rainbow Bridge is sacred too. It's sacred to the Navajos, Hopis, San Juan Southern Paiutes, Kaibab Paiutes, and White Mesa Utes. Morgan understands that. Standing at the foot of the rainbow, she writes, I bask in the bridge's sacred geology. If Mr. Cobb understood, he didn't say so. He did, however, write a description of the monument that bears witness to his reverence. Quote, so in a kind of trance, a thraldom of happy catalepsy, he wrote about his last look at the bridge, while the inadequate tongue had frozen, but the soul was quickened and the brain alert to absorb more and yet more of the beauties of it, I bided there until twilight made everything blurred, then dazedly stumbled away in the dusk, tripping over boulders and splashing through brisk eddies. It was just before the last of the sunset that the glory became almost too glorious to be borne. As the final benedictory rays played over the horizon and struck upon the upper reaches of the great span, what a moment before had been Rufus, like a pochard drake's head, now flamed scarlet, like a tanager's breast, and mauve turned to royal purple, and palish green that was emerald and dead gray was all of a sudden opalescent and gleaming like so much live pearl. A steep mica bed on the Perrin cliff alongside picked up a slanted beam and became a cascade of diamonds. The broken canyon floor lit up like a friendly hearth of ruddy fire bricks. And yonder, through the crescent of the bridge, the heavens flared with flamings of crimson and with waves of blue and tattered gold, unquote. The guy could truly write. It's up to us to protect and preserve the backcountry that he wrote about and the sacred cultural sites that have been around for thousands of years. Take only memories, Chief Seattle said. Leave nothing but footprints. This is Kathy Damaris, volunteer reader for Sun South of Arizona.
I love your mountains, deserts, and streams, the rise of Dos Cabezas, and the outlaws I see in my dreams. I love you, Arizona.
If you miss a program, you can get it on demand at sunsounds.org. Log on to sunsounds.org, left-click on Broadcast Info and Audio, then under Programming Links, left-click on Demand Podcasts. In addition, you can now listen to Sun Sounds on your Echo Dot or other smart home device.